Okay, Jeff has been super selfish with guests and bookings and stuff. And in his selfishness, it's I'm only going to interview my friends. And we had a little fight about a buddy, Luke Olson, where I claimed him as my friend.
He was your friend.
Yeah, but then Jeff had to drop in. But I've known his wife longer.
I was her youth pastor.
Yeah, so blah, blah to that. So that trash is over. This is my friend.
I almost know her.
Like, see how it yippy yappy's in there with I think I taught a class that you were in, or I think I no. So Jeff, let me introduce you to Abigail Joy on Instagram.
Officially meet you.
Yep, Abigail Joy. I have so many different names on my phone for her because I thought her last name was Abigail Joy for a while. And then her maiden name, because I met her for the first time before she was married, and that is a whole adventure. Before she was married, and hearing her dating her soon-to-be husband at the time.
Okay.
And so her maiden name and all this stuff. So I'm just going to stick with Abigail Joy.
Okay.
Because that's your Instagram. That's your handle, right? Your artistry name?
Yeah.
Abigail Joy?
Yeah, my first and middle name, yeah.
Yeah. So your middle name is Joy.
Yeah.
I always thought you were just like Abigail Joy. That's a great artist name.
Fruit of the Spirit is going to follow my name.
Yeah. She almost went with long suffering. Abigail long suffering.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good ring to it.
Okay. So I haven't got to see her in a while. For a long time that we were like weekly rhythm with her and them and me and Ashley and a crew here. And so I miss you guys so much. Oh my gosh.
I think the last time I saw her, and I'm not trying to jump in like she's my friend, was probably at Inman Coffee. And I probably put 35 cents in the jar.
Oh.
Like.
No way.
Yeah. You used to ride with Carlos Rising and that whole tribe. It was like a whole like tribe of you guys that like every Friday or Tuesday with the Inman, and we'd get cheap coffee and drop a dollar in.
I'm sorry.
I probably owe you like $5. I'll Venmo you after the show.
I promise.
Brian to Venmo you.
Okay. Bring Jeff up to speed a little bit. He knows you were a Lee student. He knows you were here. Where you are. What's going on? Give him a quick overview. Abigail Joy, Jeff, give him a little bit of that.
Yeah. So I'm in Nashville. Me and my husband, Birch, are here in Nashville. We've been here for a year and a half now, and we both grew up in Georgia. He grew up in South Georgia. I was like 45 minutes east of Atlanta. PK was there my whole life, and then went to Lee. We met at Lee. And I always wanted to come here. I always came back and forth here, flew here for music anyways. And then we got married, spent a year, stayed in Cleveland, and just were an awesome community and mentorship. Just so good for us. And then the door opened and we came here, and I'm loving it. Rich is working in sales, and I'm part-time coffee, part-time on the music grind. So, yeah.
Which is the most Nashville thing to say. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So part-time coffee, let's talk coffee for a minute, because Brian and I are big consumers of coffee.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite beverage to prepare as a barista?
Oh, yes. I have always loved honey cinnamon powder latte. And a little, here's the thing is I'm not, like, I love coffee because of people, like, I'm not a coffee snob. I don't really drink it black unless I have to. I love a latte. So I'm going to have a latte. I have been having cappuccinos lately. This is growth for me. A little less milk. But yeah, my go-to is honey cinnamon.
Okay.
Okay. What is a macchiato? And why is it a macchiato?
Why is it so delightful?
What makes it a macchiato?
Like, yeah.
I understand.
This is a really great question because people are... Starbucks ruined things because Starbucks... I'm not hating on them. I'm just saying.
They ruined things.
There is our sponsorship.
It's sponsored by Alex. No, they had a caramel macchiato. That's what they called it. But it was really like a really sugary latte. And so people come into the coffee shops. So they'll be like, can I have the caramel macchiato? I'm like, what does that really mean to you? But a true macchiato is a double shot of espresso with, and this might be different for other people, but this is my understanding. With froth milk, like two little dollops of froth milk on the top. That's a true macchiato.
And is that what you give? Okay, so some girl comes in with her Lululemon. Her Timu outfit.
It's aloe right now.
The girl comes in and she's all bounced in and she's, I want an iced caramel macchiato. Are you giving her that little dollop, the little $2 double shot? Or are you?
No. I say, what is a caramel macchiato to you?
Oh my gosh, that sounds like
it's complicated.
Such a Gen Alpha or whatever thing to say. What does that mean to you? What is your truth about
macchiatos?
A macchiato. Yeah.
Or I'll just be like, this is how we normally make them. Is this what you're wanting? And then if they look at me like, you're insane, I'm like, I got you. Don't worry.
So I want to bring this to the table. I feel like this is the right tribe to bring this up. I've got this incredible idea to start a coffee tea house where every name is musically inspired. Okay, I'm going to go first. And I think you could have one called Chai a Little Tenderness. Try a Little Tenderness.
Okay.
Brian, wedge on the spot.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
Chai a Little Tenderness.
Like the, is it the Sam Cooke song or maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I'm trying to think.
That's smart.
Yeah, gosh.
I don't know where you could go with macchiato, but.
All I can think is Black Betty. Like for just like an Americano, Black Betty, boom, boom. Like,
we're showing our age, but yeah.
That's all I could think of. What song-inspired drinks?
Yeah, and this is like, I feel like we have the right guest with Abigail Joy.
Yeah, for sure. A song-inspired drink. Yeah. Abigail?
I'm thinking really hard right now.
I feel like I should have pre-set like, this question up.
Why you gotta be so cold brew?
Why you gotta be so cold brew?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the best I got.
And I feel like she would spell brew, bruh. Why you gotta be so cold,
bruh? Why do I need so cold, bruh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bruh?
This is our cold, bruh. Yeah.
Oh, it's Me Chai.
It's
Is that Taylor Swift song?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I know all the Taylor Swift songs.
I do.
All of them. Yeah. Actually don't know any Taylor Swift songs.
I have two daughters, so I totally do, and they both have seen her in concert, as have I.
Okay.
Hello.
Who are you willing to pay $350 to go see?
Yeah.
As an artist.
I was about to say.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, to go to Taylor Swift concert.
Who would you pay that for the ticket?
Tori Kelly, for sure.
Okay.
For sure.
$350. So my favorite band would never be $350. I've already seen them like 7 times, so that doesn't count. This is my age.
Okay.
And you have to understand the age I am. I would probably pay $350 to see Bon Jovi because there's not many more times for that.
Wow.
Okay. All right. So I wasn't thinking like that classic yet. $350. Okay. Yeah, for $350, I think I'm listening on iTunes. I think I'm, or Apple Music. I don't know that I have $350. I'm digging wells in Africa, guys.
You brought the question up.
I can't be doing that. Let's see. I'll tell you somebody that I'd really like to see that I haven't, which the tickets probably aren't $350, is a guy named Mark Brassard.
Yeah. Sure, dropped new music recently?
Maybe. I'm not sure. Because I don't just follow him all the time, but. He's on my playlist.
Okay.
I have a bunch of his old stuff, Home by him. I think if I could sing like any artist, if I could adopt someone else's voice as my own, I think he's probably top of the list for me.
If we're going contemporary-ish, I guess I would say Adele. I'd see Adele for $350.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah. Abigail, $350.
Yeah,
don't tell Birch that you spent that on the tickets.
Of course, we couldn't do that. I'd have
Tori
to say
Tori Kelly. You said
Tori Kelly. Oh man, I've seen some of my other favorites for way less, so it's hard to say that. But if we went a classic, probably. I don't know how classic this is, but Corinne Bailey Ray.
Oh my gosh, girl, put those records on.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't usually sing.
Yeah,
that's a great track.
So good.
I think I would pay quite a bit to see Lauryn Hill.
Oh, that would be good.
So the misinformation of Lauryn Hill or miseducation of Lauryn Hill or the Fugees Lauryn Hill?
Yes. The answer is yes.
Yes.
Yeah. The answer is yes to that. for sure. Yeah,
Lauren, or Nora Jones.
Lauryn Hill is the reason I knew I was attracted to women that were of another race.
I did not see that coming, Brian. Yeah. You did not strike me as a Lauryn Hill guy.
Oh my gosh, I'm telling you. That's when I realized, hey.
I've never heard you listen to her or mention her.
Yeah. Well, you have to flee temptation.
Oh my goodness.
And so.
I'm smelling Ashley.
Yeah. She knows.
Ashley knows.
Ashley knows. You're an idiot, Brian.
Yeah.
You're an idiot. Yeah.
Lauryn Hill.
Yeah.
I'm taken aback by this. I did not see Lauryn Hill coming.
Yeah. She's just too good to be true.
Okay. Well, Abigail, you are a musician, so other than the major ticket price, what would be some musicians that you would say inspired your sound?
Yeah, I definitely learned guitar from Tori Kelly. I would watch all her YouTube videos and study the way she played. I asked my brother to teach me guitar, and he said that I'd have to pay him a quarter. So I said, no, I'm going to go learn off YouTube. So I would say Tori Kelly. And then I think lyrically, a lot of CCM, like older CCM.
Yeah.
Jamie Grace. I mean, that was when I was, you know, in middle school and loved them so much. But the older I got, the more I love Nora Jones. I'd say Nora Jones, Tori Kelly, and Frank Sinatra are like my top three inspirations, probably.
Who would you love to open for that's out there right now? Say, let me grab my guitar. I'm ready. A little spot on the bus. Let me come and I'll open for you.
Oh my goodness. I would love to open. Obviously, I feel like I've said her name 20 times, but I mean, Tori Kelly would be crazy, but I also would love, I love Alan Stone's music. I would love to open for Alan Stone. That would be crazy.
Oh, that'd be a great show.
Yeah. Tori Kelly and Alan Stone and Abigail Joy.
Let's
get that booked.
Yeah.
And I think that could bring a solid ticket price, too.
Yeah. And so I feel like we're naming names. Unless you're a nerd of music, like, Tori Kelly has got some mainstream, but not as much. Alan Stone is a very niche, cool.
Yeah.
But if our friends don't know who Alan Stone is, then don't pause this episode. But once we're done, go listen to some Alan Stone.
Oh, gosh.
Because that's not a name that just gets dropped. Like we already said, Taylor Swift. Everybody in the world knows that one. But that's in that deep, like it comes across your Spotify and you're like, I don't know who this is, but I know I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So much soul. So good. I listen to his that niche of music. And there's a couple smaller artists like Stephen Day and Jordy Searcy that I listened to a ton in college and I feel like influenced a lot of my writing in college. And I just saw Jordy last week at a house show, but
okay.
That'll be fun.
At what point did the writing stop being just this thing that you were kind of doing for yourself to process a breakup? Is for whatever reason, I feel like is what happened. Like some guy at your dad's church was like just the worst. And you were like hating on him with your guitar. At what point did it become like, oh, I want to create and share with the world? Was it at Lee? Was it in college? Was it in high school? When did that become like, I'm chasing this?
I think, well, I recorded the first song I released when I was 17 called Rewind. And I remember I really enjoyed the recording process. And I also had no idea what I was doing. No idea how the industry worked. And it did well on Spotify. And I was like, okay, maybe I'm not awful. Yes, I don't know. People are listening. But then I think it really was in college when I started having conversations with people. And even some people online that would message me. And I realized that, you know, this is bigger than me just processing my emotions. This is a gift that is helping people process their emotions and lead them closer to the Lord. And some of the songs I was writing in college So definitely those conversations. Some were in Instagram DMs, and some were just random conversations. I would have never guessed anybody listened to my song on Spotify, and then they found my account, and they had been following for a while. And I was like, what? That's crazy. Nobody knows me. That's crazy. So, yeah, probably in college.
When did you decide, I got to get to Nashville?
I mean, I was trying to get to Nashville right out of high school.
Ironically, like a Kobe Bryant thing. I'm skipping college. I'm going straight to the league.
Because I mean, you don't really need a degree to do music, but the producer that I was working with for those first couple songs said, "Hey, you should go to Belmont or Lee." And I was homeschooled all through my whole life up until that point. And I had honestly forgotten to take the SAT or ACT because I was just
that's some real homeschooling right there. That's not that overachiever homeschool where they've got like 60 hours of college credit. That's what is that? I thought I tested negative for ACT when I went to the doctor and they were like, nope, no ACT. So I haven't been taking medicine or nothing.
Yeah. I was at my last few years of high school, I was at the church. I was basically on staff at the church and doing dual enrollment. But yeah, it was funny. I actually looked into Hillsong College.
Yeah.
In Australia, because I want to go to Australia. I still haven't been. And then my producer recommended Belmont or Lee. And then my parents said, we'll pay for Lee. We prefer Lee. I said, okay. So I took the ACT and then I got in. I literally got in a month before classes started and I didn't know anybody at all. And except for one girl was a mutual friend from back home. Yeah. And I did a music degree and I ended up switching. You didn't ask all this, but I ended up doing communications and then minored in music.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wanted to go to Nashville. I always just trying to figure out how to get here because I thrive, which this is why I love Lee, is I thrive doing music with people. That is my favorite part about it, is making music with people in the room live. It's just the best. Wanted to be around people that were doing what I wanted to do.
Okay, so you get to Nashville. Did you find it easy to fall into, hey, I'm here, let's do music together? Did you already have a community? You've done some videos with, you saw a video with her and who was it?
Songhouse.
But you also did some stuff with Writing Rounds and Jessica Haidt and all them. What's that been like, Nashville, meeting people, networking? Yeah.
Yeah, I did have community here before I came, like in different areas. And then we had an amazing friend group from college that we were really close with, Birch and I. And a lot of them moved here before we got here. So, and those were college friends. They're not in music. So I had that community, which is a backbone, which I'm really grateful for. But I had met, so I did an internship here for school. I lived in Franklin for a summer. I entered at an Integrity Music Label in 2021. And I met a lot of people then. And so when I came back, I just was like, hey, I'm in town. You want to grab coffee? And there's a lot of people that I've had a lot of coffees. We've had to budget. purchase. How many more coffees?
Yeah,
just getting to know a lot of people. And then the best part is like, hey, will you come sing BGVs on my next single? So it's a lot of that writing. So I just started reaching out.
Yeah.
People I talked to and the people and then, you know, you meet one person and they're like, oh, do you know blah, 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 blah. And then you start to get to know them. But I think like the closest friend I've had has been this artist named Trula. She's incredible. And I met her that summer when I interned and she's connected to me to a lot of people, but we do a Bible study or a women's thing once a month. And that's been really life-giving. And I've had to give myself grace because like when I got here, I was like, well, I don't want to talk to everybody. You just got to find your pace and give yourself time to get to know everybody. Everybody's doing in their own lane. So, you know, it's hard sometimes, but it's been great.
Yeah.
And then I have those college friends that I'm hanging out with when I need a break from the music people.
So for our friends who have never been to Nashville or don't understand Nashville, right? Typically, if you're an outsider, there's two things you think about Nashville music. You think there's Christian music, which a lot of people sing at the churches, and Broadway, yeah, which is like its own little world. But in Nashville, truly, they play and sing everywhere. They sing at the Taco Bell. There's somebody with a guitar and a bucket collecting, you know, trying to get their songs heard. What has been the most unique place in Music City that you've performed?
Oh, wow. I did sing on the street in Franklin when I had to intern there. I would go sing on the street corner. I met some very interesting people, and it's a very interesting experience. I was scared at one moment, but that's a story I won't get into. Yeah, probably the corner on in Franklin.
Like on the square there?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was like down the road from the square. But when I interned and lived here that summer, I worked at an Italian restaurant that was downtown Franklin.
I think I've ate there.
So I would go work my shift. Or I would sing first, and then I would go work my shifts. And I'd just leave my guitar case open, and sometimes people would drop a dollar, $20.
Bible tracts. Did you ever get the Bible tract?
No.
The $1 million bill on the back of it tells you how to find Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To think I went to school for 4 years to sing on a street corner in Franklin. Yeah. Why you're like, I'm going straight to Nashville.
Yeah.
If I'm going to, yeah, that would be intimidating.
It's been cool because that singing, when I found TikTok, I realized that was so much more effective than a street corner in Nashville because I'm reaching people all over the world and in the comfort of my own home. And I have friends that do the Broadway thing, and I have a lot of respect for that. I don't want to do that.
I don't know that if you've listened to Abigail Joy's music, friends, you know she's not Broadway. Like Broadway it's very cover based, and it's moving more country music and traditional country music, and it's bachelorette parties and whatever. I don't know. There was a little sports bar Rachel and I used to hang out down there, and somebody bought it out. We would hang out there because there was this corner stage, and it was always just acoustic sets, and it was soulful, and it wasn't the norm of Broadway, so we'd hang out there sometimes. Yeah. And I was like, she would fit there, but somebody's already bought that out and turned it into something else. I don't know, maybe Jason Aldean's or one of those places. But like, your sound is not traditional Nashville.
No.
Are you finding that your particular style is, I want to say not welcome there, but maybe not finding a fit always in what people think about in that community?
Yeah, I think it's definitely niche. Did I say that word right?
Some people
say
niche. Close enough.
Okay.
It's niche.
Niche, whatever.
Niche.
Yeah. It's been hard because I think it's definitely exactly what you said, country and then CCM. And I'm in the CCM world sometimes, but I could do my style from anywhere, but there are people that are singing, doing my style, like helping me with it that are here, but it's not as prominent for sure. There is this one gig that I love to do. It's at the Flamingo in downtown Nashville, which actually got shut down just this week, which was so sad. But this guy that loves smaller artists, indie artists, like non-country, and every Tuesday artists would go and play at the Flamingo. So it's there. It's just very small, kind of hidden.
I'm imagining too, it's way more local, like the local Nashvillians. I don't know if that's what they call themselves.
Sure.
But as opposed to the people who are flying in and staying at the hotel outside the airport, that want like the Nashville experience. They just want somebody who wearing a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
But the local people that are going and getting Thai food, like that live there, and they want to go listen to music, they're looking for something like the Flamingo.
Yeah, or Grimey's or one of these
places. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, going to Nashville loving music, songwriter, all that stuff. Do you go to a place like that and feel pressure? Okay, I'm here now. I make this work. Because for a long time, I'm going to go to Nashville, and nobody has any expectations on the person that's about to go somewhere. But like, then once you go there,
yeah,
then it's okay. Are you famous yet? Are you
right?
Where's your mansion at with all of the money that you're raking in, with all of the record deals and the? Is there pressure, or does it feel like, man, this is I'm in my lane and it's a good rhythm?
I think it depends on where I am, like emotionally and spiritually. It comes in seasons. I think the pressure is I put on myself. I think all the pressure is here. When I moved here, I felt a huge release to just create all the time, because before we moved, Birch and I had just gotten married, and we went through so much before we got married, and we felt like we were supposed to prioritize pouring into our marriage. So I felt kind of this mental block of not yet, not yet. And then we moved here. It was, I don't know what it was, but I just started creating all the time. And I've definitely had seasons. For example, a couple months ago, I would go into writing sessions, and this is total personal thing, but I would just get really anxious and in my head. And it's most of the time, all of the time, it's because I've not had that time with the Lord to reset, remember why I'm doing what I'm doing. But I think it did. I feel like a lot of the pressure is just on myself. To be honest, like when you're, I feel like as a smaller artist, as I'm still navigating, still building, like from the ground up, my mindset is nobody's really watching. And mm-hmm. I think that helps. I tell myself that because it helps me just keep doing my thing and grinding away. I'm just like, yeah, nobody's really watching. I'm doing this because I love it. And then hopefully someday people will. But all the pressure definitely comes from myself.
Yeah. So let's say with that pressure conversation, you said you're a PK. You obviously went to Lee. You went to a Pentecostal Christian university. Have you felt be internal or external pressure to fit the mold of either being a worship pastor or the traditional Christian artist, kind of making the CCM music to that feels very, I hate to say whitewashed, but some of it is very whitewashed and very mechanical just to make records. Have you felt that pressure, or have you had that internal pressure on yourself?
Yes. Yes, 1,000,000%. I have definitely felt, since I started, I'll never forget when I went, because the first producer I worked with, he was doing a discount because he was getting married. And he was like, yeah, I'll record the songs for $500, whatever. And I came in and I had Rewind and I had a very CCM song. And I was writing a lot of that time, but I chose Rewind because it's the feel of it. So really good, and it felt like myself. But then I did have family members that were like, are you gonna like praise the Lord, or are you gonna honor God? I was like,
yeah,
okay. And it did bother me a little bit, and to be honest, it's still something I have to work through, because but the biggest thing I come back to, which Brian, I've had so many conversations with Brian Ashley about this, he's probably giggling inside right now, is that God is just as much in a song about godly marriage, about a marriage, what a healthy marriage looks like, than he is in a song that's saying like, you are good, goodness of God, you know what I mean? And what matters is that my heart is pure and that I keep listening to the Holy Spirit. So to answer your question, yes, I feel that wrestle a lot. Because I'm like, maybe I'd make a lot more money, or maybe I'd be quicker to whatever if I did this. But that like sound doesn't excite me as a musician as much. And I'm not dogging on it. I'm grateful for people that do that because it's touched many people's lives. But it's just not what I gravitate towards. And I've had to learn to remind myself it's okay. It's okay that you love this sound, and the natural sound that comes out when you write is more this like soulful singer songwriter thing. That's okay. Like God can use that. Yes, I have wrestled.
But and I think that's okay. Like Brian and you're getting to know me. We are, I would say, outliers in our communities. Like as far as our communication style, how we preach, how we think about ministry. And I think we've wrestled that from the lanes we sit in, right? Like it would be easier, and we would probably not be sitting in Brian's basement if we did things a certain way that everybody else did them, right?
Yeah. So I suit think, and tie.
Yes, yeah. You like you a little more spittle when you preach, and a little more behind it. But that's not who we are, and I think we've had to wrestle this. I've had to wrestle. I'll speak for myself. Coming to a place of our authentic voice, be it in communication. Yeah. Or be it in the expression of music, and getting to a place of going, okay, the design of the Lord is that I need to live out that. And one of our values here at A Couple of Nobodies is that you're going to live authentically. So in that sort of sense of living authentically, have you just gotten to a place, or are you getting to a place of going, this is Abigail and I'm okay with her?
Yeah. Yeah. And to be honest with you, it's taken a lot of just trying things. And this year, my goal was to release once a month, which I'd never done before. And it was for the point of consistency, not necessarily to be like, I want to have these huge numbers. I do have some numbers goals, but primarily to help myself get in the rhythm of what it's like to release, learn what it takes. And one of the biggest things I've learned, because I've released three songs now, and some of them are more of that CCM, and some of them are that soul thing. And I'm so grateful to still release them, because I don't want to, like, I don't get to decide what impacts people, right? Mm-hmm. God uses songs, different types of songs all the time. But I think I'm learning what really makes me the most excited. And not just because people are listening to it more, but because really it's what I love to do. So I think this year more than ever, I'm feeling more and more confident. And the producers that I'm working with are affirming that, saying, hey, I think we're realizing this about you. And I'm like, yeah, you know, maybe I did know that, but now I really know that. And it just takes going for it and trying things. Because I realize I get more excited about promoting one song than I do the other.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think there is a hunger to be well-received.
Sure.
Like a real hunger in all of us to really be well-received. And if being received is the goal, then the people receiving you are the ones who are empowering you. Right? You're empowered by the people receiving you. But there's a whole different thing when you're sent. If you're sent into something, then it's the sender that's empowering you, received or not received, right?
Right.
Whether I'm received. And there's been, because I get to travel into other countries and stuff, and there's been some countries I've been that have received me so well. And I was like, this is amazing. I love this. Oh, I can't believe I'm so welcomed. And then there's been places I've went and I wasn't really received, but I'm still going because I'm sent. And I think there are artists like you, and there are others that I know that are accepting their calling, that they're called by the Lord, but they might not be worship leaders, but they're not less worshipers. You're a worshiper, and you're involved in church, and you've led from churches, and I've been in places, and you steward the ministry of the Holy Spirit, but also you fill this gap that we have in the kingdom where we need a storyteller, a psalmist. And have you really found your voice as a storyteller now? Pastor Mo, who we were able to interview a couple weeks ago, talked about as a preacher finding his voice. And some of that is the content. Some of that is the even tone and how you communicate. Have you found your voice, or are you still finding it?
I think I'll always be finding it.
Okay.
But at the same time, I do think that more than anything, I've found the process that I love them, that I, that feels the best,
yeah,
and feels right. And yeah, I don't know what it is, but I've always, every time I've tried to put it down, I've picked it back up. So I do, I just love the storytelling. I love the singer songwriting thing. And it's just what I gravitate towards. And I think I'm learning that the Lord finds joy in me finding joy in it.
That's so good.
So I think I'm always going to be finding it, but I think more than ever, yes. And that is such a good feeling because it has been a long journey. And I think I've overthought a lot, and it's the overthinking has kept me from even taking steps. And this is the first year that I feel like I've really taken more, just taken steps, even if it didn't look perfect or I didn't, you know, it wasn't super calculated. And I'm finding that it's falling into place as I just take the steps. So, and just keep doing it.
So you mentioned you dropped 3 songs, I assume this year in 2026. I don't know. I put you on Spotify and just rolled for 3 hours the other day. So that next cup of coffee is on me, by the way.
Thank you.
Has there been a song that you've released, be it recently or just previously, that surprised you with the reception? Because sometimes we do things and we're like, this is the one that hits. And then you're like, I'm just going to put that one out. There's been like, it's preaching, from preaching standpoint, I'm like, there's been some messages I've gone, this is it. And it was flat. And other ones that I was like, I just can't wait to get off the stage. And people are like, that was the one that changed everything for me. Has there been a song that you're like, I didn't expect that reception from?
Yeah. So I collaborated with Songshare, which is Jessica Hyatt, LeBron, their writing collective, on a song called Wedding Day. We wrote that at a writing retreat last fall. And we literally had the writing retreat, and then I came over to the Airbnb they were staying at and recorded just the acoustic guitar and vocals. And that was what we put out. It was super simple acoustic. And that, especially on live stream, has been like the favorite song. It's about a song about the Lord coming back. And I love that song. That definitely surprised me because it's very simple, and definitely more singer-songwriter, but CCM. But I'm so grateful that I put it out, because if I would have put it in that, you know, in the little box that sometimes I put it in, I put things in, I've been like, oh, it's not really my thing, but it's touched people. And I'd say that one. The first one I put out, Rome, I had a really good feeling about it, and it's doing better than all the others. So that one, but Wedding Day, probably I was like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
And I think just personal conversation, I've realized that it's touched people more than it has a ton of streams or anything.
That's it. And I, for a guy who loves music and can't play a lick, I love singer-songwriter, and my hope has been that the singer-songwriter genre of music that was popular probably late 90s, early 2000s, like not just CCM, but like across the board, I feel like music shifted with, I would say, the introduction of Hootie and the Blowfish. 96 brought that, and for like a decade, we had this acoustic singer-songwriter vibe. We were in love with coffee houses, courtesy of Friends and whatever else. My hope is that genre would make a swing back, because there's something about the story, right? There's something we connect with in the story. Sure, we want to dance, and in the church, we want to raise our hands and shout to the Lord and all the things, but there's something about a story that is, if we find connection in it, is also our story.
Yeah.
So my hope for you, and this is not a question more than I'm cheering you on, is that it comes back. Because personally, I love that we can tell stories. I think that's significant.
Yeah.
That we do that.
For your career as a musician, and this is a question that I really am just trying to look at as I have friends like you and other people that are in the industry. In order for you to be sustainable and successful, do you have to go viral? Do you have to be famous? Is there a place for a like middle class, like an artist who has a livelihood? I say middle class, not like in excellence, but like they may not have the home in Miami and the jet, but they are like a lifelong artist. What does that look like for you? Is there a place that you can find where it's a livelihood and it allows you to do it for a really long time? Or do you need to go, does an artist need to go like to a really high level of notoriety to make it?
No, I don't think you have to go viral to be sustained. And there's a lot of different opinions on this. I think there is a middle-class musician. That's the goal for me, is I just want to make a living off of it and keep doing it. But the goal, if you care about individuals, individual people, you think about, you set up systems where it might be strong, like small, but it's mighty. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of amazing artists who have done that I really love and respect. And they actually care about the people listening, and it just feels like their little community. I think that's very possible. And I even think, to be honest, I am so grateful for the time that I've been hidden and that things haven't gone according to my plans. I'm not saying that's wrong, but I'm grateful that all the times that I auditioned for shows didn't happen, because in the hiddenness, I've built a foundation of what do I really want to stand for? What am I really trying to say? Who am I speaking to? This dangerous part is if you go viral and you don't have that foundation, it's probably not going to sustain, or it's not going to be, it's going to be harder to navigate. It is very possible, yes. It does take a lot of hard work, but it is very possible, I think.
Yeah, think about things that have gone viral, and some that's, again, I'm dating myself. If you don't have something else, I think her name was Rebecca Black, and that song Friday. Do you remember that?
Okay.
It was like 12 years ago, and it was like super hooky, and it was like on everybody's whatever radar for 6 minutes, and she probably made a bunch of money, but I don't know that she ever cut another song, or I never heard another song from her.
Yeah.
I think the danger of being viral is there's the need to go viral again. Like this perpetuating. And I think sometimes the fear is that you lose authenticity there. So I don't know that if it's possible. I hope for there is this middle class or middle of the road sustainability in artistry. I want to ask it this way, because I remember I talked to Dave Barnes a couple years ago, and he said it takes a lot of work and a lot of luck, because he talked about the song God Gave Me You, which was a huge CCM hit for him. And then he tells the story that Blake Shelton got in a rental car in Texas, and that song was on the radio, and he calls his people and says, we've got to cut that song. And now Dave just lives off the royalties, like literally just lives off the royalties. He writes other songs and things like that. So how much of it is hustle and how much of it is luck? And I'll add a third thing. How much of it is maybe the Lord's favor on what you're doing?
Yeah. I don't know sometimes, but I think my best guess, my understanding is a lot of people that have just blown up out of nowhere, they have been doing, you know, music for years and years behind the scenes. So when you're talking about a song blowing up and living off, I mean, that's what everybody hopes, is that you can have that one song that sustains you. Mm-hmm. But there's now with the ability to make music at my laptop at home, or which I don't always do, but I'm saying, you know, we have more accessibility to make music anywhere now. And so there's more ability for, instead of it having that one big song with millions of streams, you have a bunch of songs that add up, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my goal, is to just keep releasing, and then they build up to that. And then that's just like the passive income that I can sustain off of. And then there's so many other ways to make money, whether it's live show. It's harder with live shows, but if you can figure out how to simplify and do house shows or coffee shows or coffee shops, or not spend a ton of money on things. I forgot the whole question you asked me.
But what part of it is you're obviously putting in the hustle.
Yeah.
But what part of it is luck? right? Somebody stumbling on your Spotify, and how much of it is, do you think, especially as a believer, is God's favor on what you're doing?
Yeah. I don't know. I do think that there has to be some favor. Yes. I think songs are like from the Holy Spirit. Song ideas. It's crazy how you get a song out of nowhere or idea out of nowhere. There's definitely so much to it that is just crazy from the Lord. You can't explain. It's hard for me to give an exact percentage. I don't know, but I do think it's both play a part. I think it's a lot of hard work and also God's favor on it. But also, you know, there's people that have sustained music in their music career, whatever, that are not walking with God. But God's given them a gift.
I think that there are times where people put themselves in a position that make luck easy to find them.
I like that.
And so it's like, I've really put all this stuff out there, and I didn't make luck look hard for me.
Yeah.
So Dave Barnes, yeah, my stuff was on the radio. My stuff was on Spotify. My stuff, where there are people who have a folder full of songs that aren't on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or YouTube channel. And so luck would really have to work hard to find them. And it may be true of the favor of the Lord. Find myself saying, God can do more with my wrong decision than he can my indecision.
Nothing like that.
Like, God can bless a song that's not great. He can't bless a song that's not written.
Yeah.
Or out.
Yeah, or out. Or something that's not available.
Yeah.
And there's probably some pieces of that for the people who are believers and for the people who aren't believers, but that are making themselves accessible to others who could bless them, who could platform them. You that now trying to have this consistency, I'm releasing regularly, I'm doing all this. How are you writing songs when you don't necessarily feel wildly inspired? You talked about a process that you're kind of finding that you love. How are you doing that now? Because I know your husband's awesome, but I'm assuming that every day is not like Love Song and Butterflies.
That's a great title. Every day is Love Songs and Butterflies. Write that one down.
Yeah.
I think honestly, taking the pressure off of myself has been really awesome because I can sit down and I'll write something and finish it just to finish it. Mm-hmm. And it might not always be the best song ever. And honestly, if I sit down and say I'm going to write the best song ever, I'm going to write the worst song of all time. So some of it is like sometimes I get home from the coffee shop and I am so exhausted. And if I sit down and I try to write, I know that I'm just going to have a massive block. And so I'll be like, okay, I'm just going to not write and it's okay. And I feel like the best songs come when I'm not having that insane pressure on myself of writing insane songs. And sometimes I'm on a walk and I'm just praying or I don't have my headphones in. I'm just looking at nature and it pops in my head. And then I have the idea do it on my voice memo really quick. And then I'll have that to go back and work on. But sometimes everybody says this and it's so true. A lot of people I look up to, you have to write the bad song to get to the good one. And you're going to have off days and it's okay. Just finish the song and then you have it in your folder. You'll probably never open it again and that's fine.
Yeah.
You mentioned one of the things that you loved about your college experience was working with other people. And I know that what I feel like maybe it's not as true in the Christian music industry as much, but the secular world figured out collaboration early. If we put two people in the room, we get a better product or we get something different. We get both audiences. The Christian industry felt like it was really slow to adopt that. But have you found that some of your best work, I don't want to put labels on it, some great things for you creatively come out of collaboration?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think working with even better musicians than me is my favorite thing, to sit in a room, somebody that can just like play jazz keys and just, I sit there and I can riff over whatever they're doing. And because I'm limited and so I'm playing keys and some ways. So Yes, absolutely. I think all of my best songs have been from collaboration.
What kind of musician or artist do you like collaborating with the most? You are for sure a lyricist. Do you find yourself wanting that person who's just a melody specialist or a chord savant? Or do you work really well with other lyricists? What is the person you're like, man, I love that producer who can just hear it and do all the stuff. Who do you come alive with when you sit down with them? Not names, but what kind of artist do you really work well with?
Probably somebody that can hear, because I'll hear a melody and like try to play it on guitar, but then a musician that could be like, oh yeah, that and this. And I'm like, yes, exactly that. Yeah, so probably a musician, producer, and there's a couple of like specific people that I love writing lyrics with. But sometimes you get too many of that in the room, and it collides.
Oh, definitely a mutual friend. I know you've sat down with them sometimes, and then we know him like Clark. So Clark Beckham talked about one time having a session with Brian McKnight, which I wish I could have been in the room with Brian McKnight and Clark Beckham just to buy a ticket to whatever happened that day because of those two people. But he talked about Brian McKnight is such an amazing piano player as well. So I went in with this piece to like, okay, this is what I'm going to bring. He said, if I had it to do over again, I wouldn't have done that at all because that's what he could have brought. I would have just given this thing that he doesn't have that I have. But that just opened my mind up to saying, okay, when I collaborate with people, what is that thing that I need? And so I have the lyrics, or if I have this and I want to bring that, I'm thinking that there are probably producers that need Abigail. There are those musicians that they desperately need the lyricist, and connecting those things is probably all happening digitally now. It's finding those people. Even like you look at from a CCM, Forrest Frank is posting stuff and saying, drop a verse. Yeah. Somebody drop a verse on this. Anybody. And there's crazy people.
Donnie Wahlberg dropped a verse.
That's
like,
right.
Like TV, like my like childhood dropped a verse.
Yeah. Yeah. You are an easy person to be excited about. Like sitting here and talking, and especially as an artist who's out there doing that. It is very easy to be excited about what you're bringing. I hope that you stay encouraged. How do you push through the discouragement when it shows up?
My husband. And you and Ashley.
Yeah.
And my parents. Oh, man. I'm really, like, starting tearing up because I'm thinking about how grateful I am. I mean, my people... And then also realizing that it's bigger than me. You know, my creativity, my gifts are for to bless others. And also knowing that it's the Holy Spirit, you know, giving me these ideas. It isn't all dependent on me. You know, I can't mess it up. I just keep being faithful. And that sounds like such a you line. I can't mess it up. Just keep being faithful and saying yes. And I think knowing, I picture the Lord, because my dad used to do this. I thought about it this morning as I was reading. As before I walked out the door, he used to grab my face and say, I'm proud of you. And I think about the Lord doing that for me, and that he sees me, and that it's not anything that I can earn, or no performance or striving to earn is going to get more of his attention or approval. And so just realizing that I have all of that, no matter how far I go, you know, or what happens, I'm seen by the Lord. Yeah, but grateful for community and honestly scripture to identity, knowing my identity is not in the music.
Yeah,
it's
not.
How much Abigail has, you said, keep saying yes, not in, I know you're saying yes to the Lord and what he wants for you. Have there been moments you've had to say no to some things because they were outside that sort of authenticity, or they were outside even maybe what you felt comfortable with as a person of faith?
Yeah, not a ton, but yeah, there's been a few things. It's mainly, I mean, if I keep the right people around me, I don't feel like I run into that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there's definitely been seasons. I think it's so important that my team, the producers, the writers, everybody I'm working with is in alignment with, even if they're not sold out for God and have a relationship with Jesus, like they know what I'm trying to do. Yeah. So I also feel like God's protected me in a lot of ways. Not a ton, and I'm very grateful. But I'm also still growing, baby steps. So I'm sure there'll be things down the road.
Yeah. Man, for me, Brian, and we've talked about this before, that not that they're bad things, right? They're not sure. Evil things. They're actually sometimes good things, but they're not me things, right? Like there are opportunities that knock on the door and they're like, hey, do you want to do this? And I have to go, yeah, that's not me. Maybe I need to point them to who it is and be like, yeah, this is the guy or girl for it. But I think this idea of authenticity is really important to establish. And I think you've done a great job in the conversation, knowing your voice, knowing your lane, knowing your people, because I think there are opportunities that knock that are definitely no's.
Yeah. Like even for Abigail, why aren't you a worship pastor at a church? There are so many churches that would pay you great money. You can sing, you can play instruments, you can play multiple instruments. You're fantastic. You come across on live stream. There's all these things. And you could say yes to those opportunities, but you are at a coffee shop. And you're writing your own music. So there are some of the things that you're probably saying no to that you're not giving them an opportunity to make a big pitch. You're saying no before they get a chance to ask. If your yes is loud enough, your no can be like a whisper.
Yeah.
If you say yes really big, then you don't necessarily have to say no. Yeah.
And I been wondering lately, I'm like, why am I not doing that? I feel like some of that has just fallen into place because I've led worship my whole life. That's how I started doing music, was in middle school, leading other middle schoolers in worship. And I loved it. And I did it so much in Cleveland, volunteering. But I feel like specifically for me, this break has been really helpful and good for me. And I could see that in the future. But yeah, exactly what you said. It's almost just like it's fallen into place like this right now.
Yeah. I think it's good. I wish I'd learned this earlier, this idea of authenticity. Because I think, and we were talking before we got on air, when we were coming up and we were young ministers, the pool was deep. And so sometimes to get a job or to get a role or to get an opportunity, you would almost move outside of yourself to get noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you got noticed for that, you almost had to live outside yourself for that. So I think what I love about this conversation, and for those of our friends that are listening, the younger you can figure out you and stay in the lane of who you are, the better you are. And it may cost you opportunities, but I guarantee you don't want those opportunities.
Yeah.
Like you, because once you say yes to the wrong thing, and it's not even evil, but the thing that isn't you and isn't who God designed you to be, you may get stuck in not being you for a long time.
Yeah.
That's so true. I'm learning that a lot with social media, because as I'm studying social media as well, as I'm putting these songs out and seeing what's working, what's not working, I think that's the biggest area in my life where I've said, no, I'm not going to market that way because that doesn't feel like myself. Yes, I'm just going to keep doing the boring, faithful thing of what maybe is not as super entertaining or what's going viral right now, but it's, you know, what I feel like I'm supposed to do. That's probably the biggest area. Cause there's some tactics out there. You're like, wow, I don't want to do that.
We talked about Ryan. There's certain dances we won't do on TikTok.
All of them. All of the dances. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think you have to stand in front of the mirror long enough to understand your own reflection. Because if you stand in front of the crowd and you haven't stood in front of the mirror, you'll pick up your reflection from what they tell you.
Yeah.
So you're, that crowd ends up being your reflection. So you're trying to figure out who you are based on them. You got to be in front of the mirror long enough to know who you are. Not too long, because some people get trapped in self-reflection, just constantly studying their childhood trauma and what happened way back. And I'm not against unpacking the things in our lives, but there comes a time where it's like, okay, I know what I look like now.
Yeah.
I've got all the eye crusties out from the morning. I've got everything. I'm ready to go out in the world because I know what I look like. I got myself ready. Now I can go out in the world. But you got a lot of people that didn't go to school for 4 years to be developed and didn't spend time in Franklin at an internship and didn't hustle while successfully being a wife and being a daughter and a sister and all those things that you are at the same time while you're writing songs. And you right now having a grasp on who you are and your voice and your yeses,
yo, that's a big deal.
That is a big deal to have that. How old are you? Remind
25
me?
On Sunday.
25 on Sunday. I did not have that at 25.
No, I was lost at 25.
I did not have that at 25.
And I think to Brian's point is the danger of not knowing you is there's a lot of voices who will tell you who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well-meaning voices.
Especially with online, the way social media is nowadays. And as you're saying all these things, I'm like, man, thank you. Thank you, God, that I've got to keep developing. Because you're saying that, I'm like, yes, I do more than ever, but I still feel like I have so much to do and grow in. And that's huge because people, in a matter of seconds, a million opinions on your life.
Because lot of your content has been digital, sharing your music and stuff, because you do live shows, but you're not just touring constantly doing that. Have you experienced a lot of hate? Has there been a lot of people with negative opinions? Or have you experienced at least the hate that feels loud, even if it's not a lot? Where somebody says something about, oh my gosh, I can't believe you do your hair like that. Or who does she think she is?
I mean, I definitely get comments on TikTok that be like, please stop. Please shut up. You know, really? But it's like random people. It's out of
trolls.
Nowhere. Random people. I don't think I've had videos on TikTok and stuff, like dumb stuff. Like I sang in the bathroom in one video and with a piece of toast, and they were like, "You're disgusting. Why would you bring toast?"
That's a fair statement right there.
I'm like, but you're watching my video, and there's 600,000 people that viewed this, so. Yeah. Whatever.
I've been in the bathroom and I need a snack to get me through this right here. Let me bring some toast.
Listen, Matthew eats in the bathroom. He takes his whole meal up there.
Yeah.
In the tub.
Can you imagine if you had Taco Bell and the bathroom? It's like.
We need to create maybe a floating like tray for the tub.
Yeah.
And just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's. So do those things. Or is it like in one ear, out the other? I don't even pay attention.
Yeah, I don't think it. I don't think right now. I think, to be honest, what made me think, as you were saying that, what I thought more of is the harder thing is the comparison game with other artists here in town. Mm-hmm. When you see people that you compare, you're like, wait, where are they at? Where am I at compared to them? Am I ahead? Am I behind? And so there's people that. You sing in a gig in one place and everybody's, wow, you're so talented. And then you sing in another place and like no one's impressed because everyone can sing like that. And you're like, I gotta go. That's probably the harder thing right now.
Yeah. I saw a clip from John Crist.
Yeah.
And he said like his mom was like, you can't compare yourself or his dad, somebody. And he was like, the problem is you're comparing yourself to the wrong people. You have to always compare yourself to people who are worse than you. You have to compare yourself to people who, then you're like, man, I'm killing it.
Have you ever watched the movie Caddyshack?
Yes.
So I don't recommend it. It's a crude movie. But Chevy Chase's character, he comes up to him and he doesn't keep score. He's playing golf and not keeping score. And the question is, how do you compare yourself to other golfers? And he goes, by height. So sometimes you got to choose what the comparison is.
Yeah. What's my metric?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I sometimes like to tell people that I used to be 600 pounds. Because then they're like, you look fantastic. What are you doing? And I'm like, I do look great, don't I? I am. When they're like, what are you doing? It's portion control. It's just portion control and activity. I walk around a lot.
Health coach
my house.
Lindsay.
But now if they're just like, wow, you're mildly overweight. Like you are, or you're not more than mildly. You're medium overweight. You're medium overweight. You're a husky guy, Brian. Nobody's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm eating too much cheese dip. Like, nobody ever says that. But if you tell them the bar used to be here.
The bar used to be, okay.
Then it's good, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like the longer you're in Nashville, the more the expectations will change. When you just got here, I've been in Nashville for 6 months. When I've been in Nashville for 6 years, then people's expectations shift and stuff. And so navigating in an honest way, this is what success looks like for me, and defining success as that metric moves, because success at I'll be 25 on Sunday is going to define differently than when I've got two kids and I've got these other avenues of my life.
And I think as a guy not 25 and almost double that, and a dreamer, I don't know that we ever stop dreaming, right? This is what I've been wrestling, and this is maybe not the space and place, but I'm going to take it anyways. So the story of Joseph, who is the dreamer, right?
Right.
We talk about Joseph the dreamer. I used to think you get to choose to be a dreamer. Like, you get to opt in to dreamer. But the more I've read the story, nowhere in Joseph's story does it say to us, I think I want to be a dreamer. The Lord just drops dreams. And he just has to deal with those dreams or sort them out or live them out. And so for those of us that are dreamers and imaginative and creatives, I don't know that we get to choose to be that. I think even as we move through life and time and age, we're always still dreaming. I think it's how we navigate the dreams, what we do with the dreams. And then we've talked about this. It's a whole lot easier to be courageous at 25 than it is at 49. I got a lot more to lose by moving to Nashville at 49. But I think you still have to learn and stay courageous no matter the age, no matter the dream.
Yeah. Do you feel brave in what you're doing to launch out? Does it feel brave or does it just feel like life?
Depends on the day.
Yeah.
I do overall, I think coming from the hometown I did, a lot of people that I grew up with in my small hometown just are still there. And I think probably think I'm crazy sometimes. So I do feel brave coming from where I have come from. I think this is a very hard thing to do. No, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do feel brave.
Yeah. I think
I recognize that this is like a career that requires a lot of vulnerability and putting yourself out there. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're gonna do hard things, you need to know that what you're signing up for.
Yeah.
And be sober about it and be like, oh, okay, yeah, I recognize this is gonna be difficult. This is gonna be whatever it is. Like, Jeff, when you went to launch a church and plant a church,
that was a hard thing.
It was a difficult thing, and you had to know, this is what I'm signing up for.
In Cleveland, And Abigail didn't attend, but it's okay.
Yeah, she didn't. Why wasn't she a worship leader for you?
Like,
what a jerk.
What a jerk.
She never came 1 week, not even one time.
Why didn't you invite her? She's your friend.
Maybe if you drop more than 50 cents away in the tip jar.
I had to pay Carlos. He was our friend.
Reaping what he sowed on that one. Yeah.
Getting.
Yeah. For me, I have one more question, and maybe Jeff does too. So for the person that's out there that feels afraid to launch out, try it, to be brave, to let themselves dream and then do something with it, how would you encourage them?
I would say God has already given you everything you need to do what seems impossible, and somebody out there is just waiting for your yes to be reminded of their yes. It's like a domino effect. You don't realize when you say yes, when you get out of your head and use your gifts for something bigger than yourself, it reminds somebody else of theirs. And people need our yeses. And then I would say God has equipped you with everything you need already.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
I love that.
Abigail, we feel like nobody's our good thing here. A lot of times nobody gets a really negative connotation. So when we say a couple of nobodies, we're not downplaying who we are. It's just a matter that we're trying to be more faithful than famous. So with that in mind, who is a nobody in your life that you would want the world to know about?
Yeah. This probably be cheesy, but I definitely have to say my husband. I think he's incredible, and he does not get enough credit for how much he supports me and my dream. But I mean, he's brilliant. He's so intelligent in so many business aspects, and he loves people so well, and he has no desire to be famous or be known in any way, but just loves people where they're at. And he always said, I just want to carry your guitar. Like, that's just the way he lives. But I would say Birch. He's an incredible man. Brian can speak too.
Yeah.
Speak to that very well.
Birch is absolutely fantastic. One of the most loving guys that I know, fiercely loyal to people.
Yes.
And genuinely wants to know what Christ knows, to do what Christ does, to love like him. So different than Abigail. They're so different. Yes. And I think it might be neat sometime down the road to have Birch on and talk about what it's like to be in the corner of a creative.
Yeah.
What it's like to live in the corner of somebody who's that creative butterfly just out there writing the songs.
I hope somebody does this now that he's passed away. But Carl Dean, who is Dolly Parton's husband, nobody knows him, but for 60 plus years, was in her corner while she was taking over the world. And he was just faithfully riding the bus.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think it's important to have those nobodies in our life.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I know exactly what you mean by that. I love y'all's heart and mission for that. It's so important, I think, in a world where it's glorified to go viral and whatever.
Yeah.
Just be reminded to be faithful rather than pursue fame.
Yeah. And you know this for me and Ashley, we love you to the moon, all the way, all of the love. You will always have a place at our table. We don't care when the whole world loves you or they don't, you will always have a place at our table. We love you. And that will never change. And nothing you will ever do or sing will make us love you more. Right? And that's just the truth of how we feel about Abigail and Birch. And what I'll say about the culture of this thing that we're having conversations with people, we're saying it, and I think we mean it a lot. You don't have to try to be somebody to be somebody for us. And we just think that's a kingdom culture. And so thanks for coming and hanging out. Yeah. We love you a bunch.
Thanks a lot, Abigail.
Love you guys. I appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you so much.